You're listening to Clock Radio Speakers with Armand and Doc. This week's episode is split into two sides. This is Side A.
Can we just jump in?
I mean, you can do whatever you want to do.
Okay. Well, yeah. All right. So this is an unconventional episode of Clock Radio Speakers. Armand, wake up here. Follow the show at CRS Podcast. Doc here. Follow him at Doc_Beats_S0Z. We just want to get right into the show.
Wow, we're really jumping right in.
Yeah, well, because so yesterday we were recording the show.
Yeah, that's
and,
right.
And about 45 minutes, an hour into the show.
Yeah, 45 minutes in, we had a technical disaster here at Clock Radio Speakers Connecticut headquarters.
A snafu, one would say.
A little bit more than a snafu, where my computer locked up and we lost the audio. And I was mad. So I was like, nope, I can't record right now.
Yeah. Doc, and then I was like, hey, do you want to hear a mix from the album? And Doc was like, So, but we're all good to go. Now, so I want to jump right in because I feel like we're not going to get that hour back, and I don't even want to try and to recreate that hour. So, like, before we started recording, a video came out of a behind the scenes look of Justin Timberlake's Man of the Woods album.
Yeah.
If you listen to Clock Radio Speakers, you know that Doc and I are huge Justin Timberlake fans, even huger fans of two producers on the album who are rumored to produce the bulk of the album, which is the Neptunes and Timbaland. And so the 3 minute and was about 49 second clip played about what, four records?
Yeah.
So it was one because there were some videos that came out a couple days ago where Justin Timberlake went to One Oak, which is like the tunnel for hipsters, and played the album. And it was kind of a trappy 808s and Amigos sort of thing. I don't know if that's the single. And then there was a Neptunes record.
Yeah.
That sounded pretty good, right?
Sounded promising.
Okay. And then there was two other ones that were just like, okay, this is Man of the Woods. So I'm trying to figure out watching this video, like, why is it called Man of the Woods? Is it because during the entire recording of the album, Justin is clearly wearing flannels, beanies, the studio was exposed wood, like,
yeah, rustic,
yes,
very rustic. Yeah, I wonder. I mean, so considering we've heard Filthy, right?
Yep.
And then we've heard some of the other records. I wonder if this is one of those things where Justin is falling victim to a thing that rappers will fall victim to that we've talked about on Clock Radio Speakers before.
What is that?
Where you come up with this concept. Uh-oh. And you talk about the concept,
mm-hmm.
but there's only like four or five songs on the album that actually fit that concept.
Yeah.
And the rest of the album is just the normal stuff that you do because like the lead single, Filthy, which is fine. It's fine.
Yeah.
It sounds like an album track from Future Sex Love Sounds.
Yes.
But there's nothing woodsy about Filthy.
Right.
Right. Like that one trap influence record that we were talking about that, you know, they played a little bit in this new video that he has up on YouTube. You hear it in the One Oak stuff. There's nothing woodsy about that.
Nah. I mean, they could party in the woods, right?
Yeah. I mean, right. It's certainly not like this isn't exactly, you know, Timberlake does Bubba Sparks necessarily, right? Like this isn't Deliverance 2.
I mean,
we'll see. We'll see. I mean, ironically, Bubba was way ahead of his time.
We've talked at length about the Deliverance album.
Right.
And I don't know if it necessarily aged well to 2018, mm-hmm. but that album came out in 2000, I believe, 3. And yeah, they were on a completely different planet. It was like Electric Circus in a good way.
Yeah. I mean, ironically, the sort of the merging a little bit of sort of country sounds and hip hop. Right. There's a lot of modern country that's already heading down that path anyway. Right.
Yeah.
So sure. You know, Bubba Sparks might have just been, you know, 10 to 15 years too early.
Yeah.
I think we probably need to do the Justin retro. Right. Or the definitive 15 on Justin before the album.
Yeah, probably. Probably a definitive, because I feel like we've
done the retros.
Yeah, between the Timbaland retro and the Neptunes retro, we've talked about Justin's albums. We haven't necessarily talked about his career.
Right.
But we could do a definitive 15 and kind of retro it out.
Yeah, that could be a nice you know, combo to the album review as well.
Mm-hmm.
That could work.
I think so.
I like how we're planning future definitive 15s while we're doing a definitive 15.
Future shows love sounds, right? That was really bad.
That was a reach. That was a big reach.
I'm fine with that. I'm fine with that. I'll be reach guy.
So we just rushed right into this. What's going on, man? How you doing?
I'm okay, man. I'm okay. Yeah. It's like we got like 7 or 8 inches of snow this weekend. We got about four and a half inches on between Friday night and Saturday afternoon. And then all day Monday on Martin Luther the King Day, we got another 4 inches, maybe even 5, because seems I had more snow on the truck this morning than I did on Saturday. And it was just, I don't know if Columbus just isn't paying people to plow the roads. I don't know if we need to call Mr. Plow, but like the roads are trash.
You need to get out there. You got to put the plow in front of your truck. And it's Big Truck Series for real.
Truck Series.
And we get the picture for the mixtape. It's you, like, you know, really mean mugging in front of the plow.
Yeah, for sure.
You're wearing some Carhartt.
Yeah, definitely got some Carhartt.
This could be a whole look for you.
A whole look. So basically, I'm getting my Man of the Woods on. The whole album is based off
of Man of the Snowplow. Yeah, it's a whole
Man of the Snowplow. That's hilarious.
There's still time, man. There's still time. The album's not out yet. You still got time. We could rebrand this whole thing right now.
And man, look, we just need to finish this album. We just need to finish this album.
Stuff's good, man. Everything's good. I had one of those. Had a long day of work. But I'm here now. It's all good. We're recording the show. Got a whole different audio setup. So hopefully, cross your fingers, everything's good.
Yeah.
Man. I'm ready to do this. This first time that we've done a definitive 15 in this style, which we've sort of alluded to, but haven't really talked about yet, which is that we're going to recap 1998.
Yeah.
And we have reasons for doing that. And I want to talk about that. But before we do that, is there anything else that we need to cover before we get into this? Your man's The Amigos have a release date.
Yeah, Culture 2's coming out. I don't know when's the release date.
It's January 26th, next Friday.
Next Friday. Okay.
So is Stir Fry really hitting?
What's that?
Is Stir Fry, has that really like hit with people?
Not really. But I heard it on the radio maybe the day after we did Clock Radio Speakers.
Mm.
And I was like, yo, this joint is tough.
Yeah, I like Stir Fry. Oh, Stir Fry is going to be the official song for All-Star Weekend. Okay.
Okay.
But
good
for Stir Fry. But yeah, I'm curious. I wonder if this is even charting right now. I'm looking right now. Maybe not. I mean, it's still a little early.
Yeah, it might still be early. It might be a slow burner. But at the same time, like, I think people, I said this on a couple weeks ago, I like when producers and other artists stretch the Migos into doing something different. Because it doesn't sound like, okay, it doesn't sound like they're trying to chase the record. Like, for example, right. your man David Easton came out today, right?
Did. Yes.
Another project, another mixtape. I think we need to have a Davies conversation because I think he speaks to a larger point about artistry and engaging your audience in 2018 and what we want versus like a reality of how that should happen. But he's got a song produced by Illmind. I think it's called Thank You. And you know, when I heard it, he's like sing rapping and it's clearly like the, yo, Def Jam wants you to do a hit. And then all your boys in the studio are gassing you. Yo, this is what get you on the radio right now, son. This is what they doing right now. And it just sounds like someone's trying too hard. And I guess it bodes this question. If I sign to a record label, or just you know, whoever signs to a record label, right? You sign them knowing what they are capable of doing. So then why do you have them do something that they've never done in order to achieve this one or this one particular level of success that seems to only succeed in the eyes of major labels? Like, why are we still chasing the hit record or the radio? Well, not even the hit record, because I mean, what's a hit in 2018? But like, why are you chasing the other type of record when since 2015, Davies has been a certain type of artist? And that's, I think he does need to stretch outside of his comfort zone, but I want to get into that later. But I want you to answer that question first. Like, why are we forcing artists to do stuff that they otherwise wouldn't do and don't sound right or comfortable doing?
Yeah, I mean, this is going to be a messed up comparison, but I'll try it anyway. So sometimes people get into relationships because they think they can fix the person.
Absolutely.
Sometimes record labels sign artists because they think they can fix the artist. Like, if only they did this, they could do all these great things. It's potential, right? And, you know, a more generous interpretation is like, if you're an NBA team, you're drafting a player and you're like, you know, there's a lot of raw potential there. And you try to get them to do things like really far outside of the comfort zone because you don't even know what they can be yet.
Sure.
Right. I just don't really know if they're like, I mean, I'm kind of amazed that a label would take that approach in 2018. Like,
I agree.
There's just the risk reward just isn't there. Right. 20 years ago, you could do that because if you hit big, you made so much money. It was ridiculous.
Yep. I agree.
But the economics don't favor that anymore. So it's kind of, it's not so much that like it's a good or a bad idea on the merits. Right. I mean, I think it's more just surprising that a label is sort of or even that an artist is perceiving that there's pressure to do that, right? That's just, the economics don't reward that anymore.
Right.
Right. It's all about like, it's not so much about hitting like Grand Slam home runs. It's like a steady stream of doubles.
Right. Right. So, okay. So somebody like Davies, right? So he just, when did he put out Paranoia? Let me look this up real quick.
Yeah. Oh, you're asking the wrong. I am not in on the East.
This is not your guy. Okay, so Paranoia came out August 18th.
Okay.
Right? So now today, I like the fact that he released on a Tuesday though, but I'm just old school. So January 16th, so September, October, so 4 months later, he puts out Paranoia 2 or P2. So essentially, you are putting out these are quote unquote mixtapes. And even with the recent discovery, surprise, that, you know, labels were putting out albums but calling them mixtapes in order to sort of mask the budget and not pay producers. Big revelation there.
Let me clue y'all into a secret. Like, I didn't get paid for those Lloyd Banks records.
Right.
Right. Right. Which was no joke. Almost 10 years ago now.
Right.
Right. And like, I didn't get paid for those.
And the only difference between Halloween Havoc and Paranoia is that Halloween Havoc was on that Piff and Paranoia is on Spotify.
Right.
There's no difference. And Who Kid's screaming on Halloween Havoc.
Like, right. Because that was expected, but
that
you
was
know.
Expected. Exactly. So
right. But those were, it was the same thing. We just didn't have the infrastructure.
Absolutely. So even now, so you've got somebody like Davies who is putting out music every 4 months, touring semi-consistently. People are like, people like him or people want to like him because, you know, girls like him. He's tall. They think he's handsome, whatever, whatever.
He's tall.
Spoken like
a tall man.
I was about to say, listen, back in my day, definitely the height. Yeah. Anyway, so
you just morphed into Denzel Washington right before my eyes. Hey, that was great.
Hey. So, you know, so girls like him, guys like him because he does like rappity rap stuff, but it's like in the same vibe of Jadakiss, like that early to mid 2000s New York rap that a lot of people love. And so he's seemingly doing a lot of things right, but a consistent theme whenever we talk about him on this show is he doesn't have the record. And listening to Paranoia and Paranoia 2 was like, and even listening to this one today is like, he just doesn't have the record. And now people are starting to kind of, you know, grow stale of him because he's putting out these full length 15, 16 track projects and they all sound the same. Nothing stands out. And then when he's trying to do something to separate himself, it feels forced and contrived and it's not good. So, but on paper, this is what we say. Nowadays in 2018, you have to consistently put out music, consistently engage a fan base every day. You should be on Instagram every day, putting out freestyles once a month or once a week or whatever. So here's somebody who's doing it within the major label infrastructure and it's working, but it's not working. So where do we, I don't want to say draw the line, but like, how do we clean that up? Is it just to have a hit record? If these records were hitting, then it would be good? Or would it be something like, if these records were hitting, then he wouldn't need to drop 4 months apart, where this could have came out in March or May or June because he'd still be working Paranoia records. Like how is this going to work in 2018 with these, with like new artists and the short attention span of this social media generation?
Sometimes you still need a record, right? I mean, it's all about attention. So like you can get, like, you got to have something that's winning over people's attention, right? Yeah. And enough people's attention.
Yeah.
And, you know, I mean, Cardi B won people over, you know, sheer force of personality, right? And, you know, she's got records now, I guess. I mean, I still...
Don't do that.
I'm just saying.
Don't do that. She had records before, dang, what's the name of the record?
I just want to call it, I just call it Bloody Shoes, but,
She had records before Bodak Yellow and, you know, people, I don't know, are people catching on to this Bartier Cardi record? Or is it a slow burn, or are people just like, okay, where's the album?
I think there's just sheer force of Cardi B where it's like everything Cardi B is getting played right now.
Yeah. Yeah, because she's got like, what's she at, like 6 records on Billboard right now? 6 what? Or something like that?
Bartier Cardi, Motorsport, what else? Hold up, we'll look at it.
Right, she's got like a Spanish record on the radio.
Oh, right.
So that's
Oh, Finesse 4. Is at number 3.
Finesse. Yep. Finesse is at number 3 already?
Already.
That's crazy.
Yeah, wow. Yeah, Bartier Cardi might have already peaked. It was a top 20 hit. Motorsport was number 6 at peak. Oh, No Limit, the G-Eazy record.
No Limit.
I hate that record.
Really?
That tempo is not right for anybody.
That tempo is perfect for me.
Anybody on that song.
Like, I would kill a record at that tempo. And the beat is just like, it's just 808s.
I don't like the beat. Yeah.
It's a sped up DJ Paul and Juicy J record with no sample.
Hey, you're ruining everything that I enjoy about DJ Paul and Juicy J beats.
Hey, man.
74 BPMs forever, man. What are you talking about? Anyway, so what were we talking about? Oh, Dave East.
Yeah, Dave East.
Let me ask you this. So I'm somebody who's not really into Dave East.
Okay.
What's the one record you think I should listen to that would like sell me on Dave East? Does he have that?
No. I would probably tell you to listen to like a freestyle or something.
Well, let me ask you. I'll flip it around. I'll put you on the spot. Okay.
Uh-oh.
Somebody doesn't know Armand Wake Up.
Uh-huh.
What's the one song you tell them to listen to?
That's a good question. I think, you know what? Honestly, that's the purpose of this album.
Okay.
I wanted to make definitive records. I think most people will probably point you to like Genesis Revelation or something like that.
Yeah, people have mad love for that song.
People love that song. It's the hook.
Mm.
It's the hook. People love that hook. Yeah, I would say Genesis Revelation.
Okay.
But that's not like, to me, that's not definitive, like, yo. Yeah. I don't know if I have that yet. So I guess that kind of putting it in that perspective gives me a different type of grace for Dave East. I get it. I get it at that level.
Like, as an artist, I feel like you should be able to, like, if you don't know the answer to that, you should be thinking about that.
Right.
Like, what's the one record? You have one shot. What is it? What are you giving people?
Yeah.
Right? Like, when I used to give people who weren't named Armand beats, like, I used to, you know, it used to be like, oh, well, if you listen to these 5 beats, you can get... No. Like, what's the one record?
What's the one?
Sometimes you get one. That's it.
Yep.
And sometimes you get to a certain level where you can just say, oh, any one of these 3, it's fine. I don't care. You're going to love them all. Yeah. That's a great place to be at. But you should at least feel comfortable with one.
Yeah. 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 I think this album has three.
Three. Okay.
I think we got three.
Okay.
Oh, and the next. I mean, my bad. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. Yep. Okay.
Yep. Yep. I'm showing.
Yep.
Yeah, that makes sense. That makes sense, though. So, yeah, you should be wanting in the midst of feeding, because I think sometimes artists like will focus on feeding their fan base. Right. And in that, it's like, well, you need to make something for, we'll call it commercial. Right. But really, it's something more accessible or something more definitive, which is a better word. And then it's, you know, it's not something that's easily digestible. So maybe it's like me rapping over, you know, rapping over whatever for 80 bars, or it's, you know, yeah, go listen to Davies on Hot 97. Like maybe people don't have that, or the Davies records that I like, I know that people, that's not an accessible record. Maybe I would say Keisha for him. He's got a record called Keisha. It's like a storytelling joint, but it's, you know, it's like a darker version of How It's Going Down. But it's like, okay, this is cool, but it's not like, yo, I didn't hit you up and say, Doc, you got to hear Davies, Keisha.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? And I think as artists, since you put it in that perspective, I understand that like you want people to go to their friends and say, yo, you got to hear this song from this artist. And Cardi has, well, yeah, Bodak Yellow. Yeah. That record encompasses Cardi B in 3 minutes. Everything you need to know about Cardi B is in within that three. This is all revelation I'm getting on the show. So maybe if I'm repeating myself, I'm just realizing it. That whole record is Cardi B in 3 minutes. That is a sales pitch right there. Everything you want from her is in that song.
I think she's getting better.
I think she is getting better. Yeah, just I don't think that this is her apex. I just think that that is a clear representation of who she is on January 16, 2018. I feel like when we hear the new music or the new album or whatever, like there may be another one or two or three records. Because, okay, here's what happened. So Sunday, I went to this thing called Culture Talk. It was, you know, downtown, a bunch of people talking about men and transparency and vulnerability. It was really dope. After that, all the DJs in the city, they throw a party once a month called The Redo. I stopped in a redo for like 20 minutes to say what's up to all the DJs, whatever, show my face, let them know I had an album coming out. And the last DJ is closing the set at the end of the night. His name is Rich Nice. He's from New York. Nicest guy in the world. Love that dude. If you remember Clock Radio Speakers back in the Pulse Radio days when we reviewed To Pimp a Butterfly live. Was it To Pimp a Butterfly or was it Good Kid, M.A.A.D City that we did live on like a Friday night?
To Pimp a Butterfly. We did it live on the radio. Okay.
We did it live on the radio. So Rich was the one who had that radio station going. That was all him. So into his set, about 20 minutes in, it's all vinyl. He just starts playing every song off of Get Rich or Die Trying. And they all go. All of them. He played Heat. He played Like My Style. Like he played the whole album. And I'm looking in the crowd and this is like peak. It's packed. The alcohol is in people. They're dancing, like they're really enjoying themselves, and they know the word. Then he starts playing mixtape joints. So I share all that to say Cardi could potentially have like how 50 Cent has Get Rich or Die Trying. This is how you know Get Rich is a classic album, because you could pick 10 records from that album and they embody who 50 Cent was in 2003. That's just a revelatory artist thing for all of our artists listening to the show. Yeah, I'll be back. Okay. I'll be back.
Okay.
Take over the show, Doc. I need to clear my head.
You need a moment.
I need a moment because I just realized that.
Well, we are trying something different this week on Collect Radio Speakers. We are doing and there's nothing else new we need to talk about, right?
No, I think we're good.
So we have batted around before the idea of taking our retrospective or taking our definitive 15 sort of series and applying it to a given year. Because there's some interesting stuff that you can learn, right? And plus, I mean, honestly, because we're now old heads, like we like revisiting some of this stuff because we have a little bit of perspective. We can go back and figure out, is that really how we remember it? Does that hold up? Was it really as good as we thought it was? And there's a really good catalyst for us to talk about it, to kick it off this week, because Armand, there was a thing going on Twitter, about how 1998 was the best year in hip hop, right? Can you give people a like 90-second summary of that?
Yeah, so B-Dot from Rap Radar made this delivered a hot take, started listing songs from or albums from, you know, everything from Is Dark and Hell Is Hot, Flesh of My Flesh, Extinction Level Event. I was about to say Good Kid, Mad City. You know, Miseducation of Lauryn Hill, Outkast, Quimini, Tribe Called Quest, Love Movement. Just start listing all these songs, Cannabis, Second Round Knockout, songs, albums, Big Pun, Capital Punishment, yada, 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 et cetera, et cetera. And it became this big to-do online because, you know, if we're talking about the best year in hip-hop, people will instantly go to 94, 95, definitely 96. 98, I don't know if it's necessarily the first year that rolls off of your tongue in that. So it felt like a hot take when he said it.
Yeah, and I thought it was a hot take too because I immediately was very dismissive.
Yeah, but
I gotta say, doing this prepping for the show this week, oh, 98 was it. Look, there are some incredible albums, incredible songs from 1998.
Yeah,
there's also some stuff that did not age well at all.
Yeah,
I almost bowled over in laughter listening to Cameron's Shanghai.
I didn't even get that far. What is that?
You should play that right now.
All right, hold on. Listen, I went straight for what I knew. Like, I'm not gonna lie. I've never listened to Confessions of Fire all the way through.
Oh my God! See, this will be a revelation for you.
Yeah, I've never. I don't need.
You probably
to.
Never made it this deep.
No, because when I thought of Cameron in 1998, I went to like two. I went up two records immediately came to mind.
Yeah, this is gonna be great.
Oh my God! Why are there 19 songs on this album? All right, hold on. All right, here we go. Oh, this is super 1998.
Oh, Swiss.
Shut the fuck up, punk!
Whoa.
Fucking faggot, I'm tired
of
this shit!
Whoa.
It's so bad.
All right.
That is that beat is. Oh my goodness.
I want to apologize to all of our.
Yeah. I'm so sorry.
We are a family show. I did not know that was going to happen, and I want to apologize further for that beat. I think I'm more offended by the beat than like the lyrics to the song.
That is an atrocious song.
Can we play the other? Can we play the other song to make up for what we just heard?
I mean, there's a couple you could play from that, but you want to play the other Swiss record?
No. Well, yeah, because he did do that. We talked about that recently, right?
Glory.
One, two, check me the fuck out.
This is super 98 too.
I'm here now.
Such a rapper thing.
That beat is perfect 1998 Swiss.
I want to say this, though.
Yeah.
There are two things that every rapper, you're not a rapper if you haven't said I'm here now. and if you said they shouldn't have let me in the game. Those are two. That is synonymous with we got one. They not ready for this one. We in the building. It's your boy. All that stuff.
These all sound like hypothetical No Limit album titles from 1998.
Listen,
they shouldn't have let me in the game. that's definitely a No Limit album title.
You are about to respect No Limit Records by the end of this episode.
Put some respect in my name. Should have definitely been a No Limit album title.
That would have been a Cash Money album title if Birdman would have came on The Breakfast Club in 1999. Manny Fresh would have had 20 beats like already ready to go.
Right.
Oh my God. Yeah, so 98. Yes, I agree with you.
They shouldn't have let me in the game, but the game let me in. That's the title.
That's up there with The Game Is to Be Sold, Not to Be Told. Which is, spoiler alert, might be Snoop Dogg's worst album. Terrible.
It's a terrible album. And yet, it came out in 1998, which...
It did.
I mean, 1998 was a really... this will be hard for... So I'm going to get meta here for a sec. We did a really good job when we recorded the first draft of this, like capturing why 98 was important. I will try to get it again. But 98 was this huge transition year.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So it's a huge transition year, but also like hip hop is really trying to find its way.
Yes.
You know, because the West Coast was dominant.
Yep.
East Coast has a comeback.
What was, wait, hold on. Was the West Coast, I don't know if the West Coast was dominant in 1997. I think the
I'm leading up like 92, 93, 94, like the West Coast is.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
Right? And the East Coast has, the East Coast reasserts itself famously, right? Finds their sort of their way with these sort of two twin, you know, tracks, right? One super grimy, one super shiny. Right. And those continue to evolve. Yes. And there's some overlap and they go back and forth. But you get this. But it's hard to remember now. But like, you know, 98, we are at that point when 98 opens. Right. We are less than a year and a half away from Tupac dying. We are less than a year away from Biggie dying. We're coming off a year where Puff becomes the biggest name in hip hop, dominates the charts. And, you know, you know, the Fugees go from, you know, trying to be Bob Marley to singing about Electric Avenues, right? Like the transition that people tried to do in 1 year was amazing. And then you kind of are going to get like, people are like trying to figure out what's the next thing.
Right.
Right. And late 97 is full of artists who are like, well, you know, Jay's like, I don't know. Like on the one hand, he puts out an album that's got Streets Is Watching and Rap Game Crack Game, but it's also got Sunshine and I Know What Girls Like.
Right.
Right. And it's got Teddy Riley, you know, singing 80s hits, right? I mean, like, artists didn't really know what to do. And so you've got this, okay, well, what's the next move sort of thing? But then you've also got these three different, and I'm lumping some together, right? But these, to me, these three really like different centers of sound from the South coming out. You've got what No Limit and Cash Money are doing in New Orleans. You've got Dungeon Family, and I want to give credit to Goody Mob as well, right? Because 98 is still standing. Goody Mob and Outkast, what they're doing coming out of Atlanta, and what on the production side, what Timbo and the Neptunes are doing coming out of Virginia Beach. And, you know, this was still an era where, like, the idea of working with, you know, somebody from a different region was still, like, a thing.
Yes.
Right? Like, when, like, Jay-Z was on the I Got the Hookup soundtrack.
Yeah.
And that was a thing.
He's also on the Hot Remix.
Right, right. And so that was like, you could get like, that was like a, you know, if we were doing Clock Radio Speakers in 98, we would have had a whole episode about the Hot Remix.
Oh, God.
Would have been a lot of laughter.
Would have been a lot of laughter.
Right? But that was still like a thing.
Yep.
And so you've got all these different weird strains of stuff, like the diversity of sounds, like it's not quite settled. Like people are trying stuff. And the sound of hip hop is just changing so dramatically. Like by the end of 98, it sounds almost, I mean, like it almost sounds almost nothing like even 12 months before.
Right.
And so does that, I mean, is that a fair sort of a setup for 98? Like,
absolutely. It's a lot of, because 97 was a lot of like, who am I? What am I doing here? It's like first year in college or you're out of college and now you're like, okay, I need to find a job. And I think 98 is the year, understatement, where hip hop got its footing. Understatement. I think that's what separates it from 95 and 96, because 95 and 96 were years that were sort of like developing momentum off of each other.
Mm.
Because 94 was probably the definitive year where, you know, the East Coast was so down and out. They looked at Ready to Die and Illmatic as albums that basically saved them. Like, people got to recognize, like, Tribe Called Pest.
Oh, no.
Oh, no. That was an accident. Tribe Called Quest put out two albums in the early 90s. And, like, people liked them, but it didn't change the fact that the West Coast was absolutely just killing everything. And so with hip hop being birthed in New York always feels the need to have a foothold in the culture that it helped to create. So starting from 94, you get the momentum from 95 into 96. And then the apex of it is 96, 97. And that momentum just completely gets derailed with the deaths of Tupac and Biggie, as you said. So 98 is almost like largely a clean slate, where some of the things from 97, almost nothing from 96 really works. somebody like Redman put out Muddy Waters in 96, and then in 98 he puts out Doc's the Name, and it's just, it's totally different.
Totally different. Absolutely.
By totally different, I mean Muddy Waters is considered to be a great album, a classic to some, and nobody really talks about Doc's the Name.
For good reason.
Except for I'll Be That. Yeah, it wasn't a good album. So some things kind of trinkled over from 96, 97, particularly the Shiny Suit Movement or whatever. But all this is maybe stuff that was bubbling underground like a Cash Money, or stuff that just came out of nowhere like a DMX.
And there's an astonishing number of major names who have their debut solo albums in 98.
Absolutely.
Right?
Absolutely.
Noriega, Cam,
DMX.
Big Pun, DMX. I'm going through Cannabis. Blackstar.
Blackstar.
Right. And it's just like, yeah. I mean, I always should, like, my image in 98 is that Source cover.
The Locks.
Yeah, The Locks. The Locks are, Muddy Power Respect's an interesting album.
Very much so.
I always think of that the Source cover where they had all the guys who were up next, right? So DMX, yeah. That cover is 1998 to me.
Yes.
Okay.
I agree with you. Right. So let me, just for full disclosure and transparency, I can't find my list.
Oh no.
So I'm going to have to freestyle my list.
Well, what we can do
I'm sure I can. We talked about this last episode. So like, where were you in 1998?
Right. So 1998, I was 14 turning 15. So I was sophomore in high school, and then a junior in high school in the fall. And I'm living in Oklahoma, rural Oklahoma, because my dad was in the Air Force, in a town that did not have a hip hop radio station, and you could not get one on the dial. That's how far away we were from whatever. So all I had for hip hop was The Source and really Rap City. Right. I mean, whatever, you know, was MTV Jam still a thing?
Nah, in 1998, you had you didn't have Yo MTV Raps. You had MTV Jams.
Yep. Yeah, MTV Jams was still a thing in 98, but Rap City was.
You had Direct Effect?
Oh, man. I forgot about Direct. Oh, man. I need to Google Direct Effect.
I think
Direct Effect feels like 2000. I need to check.
Look, Direct Effect was kind of hard.
I just want an MTV Jams, like, Netflix streaming service. Would that be so bad?
Yeah.
That's a great idea, actually. Yeah. I know there's YouTube, yes. But like, I really just want.
Nope. Direct Effect is 2000.
2000. Wow. Okay. That just sounds 2000 to me.
Yeah. So hip hop. Oh my God. So I searched MTV Hip Hop 1998. You know what's the first thing that came up?
What?
A Rozelle freestyle.
In 98?
Yeah, Rozelle is peak 98 because Slick Rick. Artist storytelling.
Oh man.
Woo! Boy oh boy. Yeah, that's my God. MTV
Party. Artist storytelling is 99.
It is, but he's on Equipment now, right?
Yeah, but that song's not released as a single with the remix until 99.
Okay. What was Slick Rick doing in 98? He did something in 98.
He didn't do anything in 98. He didn't really, because that record with Outkast was his reintroduction, because he had the Def Jam album in 99.
Okay.
Right?
I mean, why is he doing it?
I see the same thing, but I'm like, what was Slick Rick doing?
He had to have been doing something. When did Women Lose Weight come out?
Women Lose Weight is, oh my God. I can't believe that's a song. But if you listen to other stuff that Slick Rick was doing, it's not that different, right? Oh man, I forgot about Montel and Slick Rick. I like.
Oh Lord, oof.
That's 96. He was on the Jermaine Dupri album, Life in 1742, Fresh.
That wasn't what he was doing.
That's a dope record. And then he had a song on the Rush Hour soundtrack. He apparently made a record on the WWF Aggression album with Ice-T. Called Pimpin' Ain't Easy.
For the Godfather. First of all, the 25th anniversary of Raw comes on in next week.
Oh man.
I think so. Yeah, 25th, and literally everybody's gonna be there. Second of all, that WWF Aggression album is terrible. It had Method Man doing the theme song for The Rock. It had Mac 10 doing the song for The Big Show. It had Run DMC do Degeneration. It was just, it was bad. Oh, no.
Cool Keith and ODB.
It was bad.
They got the Eastsiders to do a record for Kane. That's hilarious.
Yeah. Actually, that record was kind of hard from what I remember. Don't play it.
Mystical and Rascass. No.
We're going to talk about Mystical today.
Only if you make me.
I'm making you in 1998. Yeah, we're having a Mystical conversation for sure.
Who is big? Oh, interesting. You know who had a... Oh, I'm looking... Great. Thanks, Clock Radio Speakers. I'm looking at the production credits for WWF Aggression. All right, I need to get out of here right now.
Okay, so in 1998...
Where were you? What were you doing?
I was a freshman in high school. So I was 13 going on 14. I started school when I was younger because my birthday's in October. School started in August, so they let me start school early. And my house was really crazy, really tense in the house. And so my father was working 15, 16 hour days. My mother was working nights and my sister had just moved out the house. So I lived maybe 5 minutes from the school. So I'd walk home after school. And so that's Rap City. That's, of course, TBS, so that's Saved by the Bell and all that stuff. So I'm largely taking care of myself. So this is the year where hip hop became more than just something to listen to and something that you just kind of thought was cool from the outskirts. Like, this is when I really dove into hip hop and it became like a part of my life. It became a religion that I studied and followed in 1998. Yeah, I lost my list, but like it's not going to be hard to recall this year because I remember this year super clear. So I'm ready to rock.
We hope you enjoyed Side A of this week's episode. Please check out Side B at clockradiospeakers.com.